Wayne Holstead on behalf of the relator. I'm here with my colleague Craig Boyning, and I just want to indicate that if there's a need for rebuttal, Mr. Boyning would probably be the attorney who would handle that.
Thank you.
The problem I have with this case is I'm in discovery mode, and we're already in the Court of Appeals, and acknowledging that when Mr. Albedry first came into our office, the City Council had already acted, which meant the only procedure we had available to us would be the petition for cert to this court, where I think the court has jurisdiction to hear this, because really what we're trying to achieve and asking the court to do is to vacate the revocation and give us a chance to proceed with the third alternative, which is to actually have an administrative proceeding. We're currently involved in an administrative proceeding with another client in a similar situated case.
Well, you did start out really handicapped because the prior attorney did agree to admit and was just going to argue, as you say in your brief, the sentence more or less. And you're really asking for plea withdrawal.
Exactly. I mean,
is there any case law to support that?
Directly on point of it, trying to vacate administrative action, I didn't find any, which is why in my brief I argued Rule 60 in a civil case. But I also had some authority on a plea withdrawal. I actually think because there's no judge involved in the prior action, this would be an easier and more justifiable situation to vacate, because you're not vacating something a judge did. It's really a City Council action. And I acknowledge.
Did you go to the City Council first and ask to withdraw?
Ask to withdraw?
Whether they would undo and allow you to have an ALJ. Is it possible that you could have gone to the city and they would have taken an action and then we didn't need to be here? Or at least you would have gotten an order from the city that you could have appealed as to their refusal to vacate the original decision?
I don't think we did. We were under some pretty serious time constraints. The petition that was put together was really done in a couple days. So whether we did or not, that would have been Mr. Boyning, but I don't know that you did. Okay. No, then we didn't.
So you're really asking us to basically create a new procedure to allow withdrawal of a decision by the City Council so your client can go back and basically have a do-over with another agent, with an ALJ instead?
It's not really a do-over because he didn't really get a chance to do it in the first place. I mean, basically.
Well, but, I mean, he had an option of several ways to go, and one of them was to go through the City Council and admit to the facts and just basically argue the penalty, which is what he did, versus contesting the facts and going to through an ALJ. So, I mean, that opportunity had already been there, and he was represented. So I'm struggling as to why we should more or less create a new path to allow somebody to basically do a plea withdrawal in a civil matter.
The authority I cited was really based on the excusable neglect, based on the attorney mistake. And I think it's worth noting that Mr. Albedry is an Iraqi immigrant who was completely beholden to the advice of his attorney to say that he should have been able to do this or to follow another route. I don't think a informed consent or consent on his part is really reasonable. I think he should be excused for that.
But isn't it really a calculated risk? I mean, he did acknowledge wrong with the first citation by paying the fine. I'm not sure it was unreasonable for his counsel to say, you know what, we've already admitted that, let's admit it again, but let's argue for argue for leniency in terms of the punishment. It seemed like a reasonable argument. City Council, unfortunately, did not accept that. But, I mean, why wasn't that an appropriate decision by his attorney to suggest that route versus having to go argue before an ALJ when you've already got one admission on the record. It's, the result wasn't what he wanted, but, you know, it seems like we're almost looking at a 2020 hindsight saying, well, you know, I guess that one didn't work, and let's get a shot at another process.
I was really moved by watching the video testimony of the hearing with Mr. Albedry basically standing there silent because his attorney is making an argument. And part of the reason I was moved is because I talked to Mr. Albedry a couple times before seeing the video, believing that he had a case to bring, and yet he's simply following the actions of attorney, unable to speak on his own behalf, which he has in front of us. I just think he should have that opportunity. It's hard to argue he's denied due process when his attorney made the choice, but on the other hand, it is similar to clients who will plead guilty when there aren't really underlying facts to support it, and he's allowed to vacate the plea, provided that there's a basis to actually go forward with a case based on a not guilty plea.
What's the basis to vacate the city council's decision?
Part of it has to do with the procedure that was followed in the investigation, and part of it is the identification of the offending product, really, whether it really did violate the statute. At this point, I led by saying that I'm in discovery mode. I can't say definitely what the final case would be because we haven't had a chance to do an investigation. So all I'm asking is he shouldn't have taken the route he did. He did it because he followed the advice of the attorney. I'm not criticizing the attorney, but based on the investigation we've done, we think he should be entitled to have some opportunity to at least defend himself. Because at this point, with a revocation, I don't think he can survive in business. And I think that it's fairly draconian considering the questions and issues in the case.
Well, but, you know, this court doesn't second guess, you know, the decision. And as long as it's supported, I mean, we might have come to a different result. Like I said, I think the arguments were very persuasive, but they did have the authority to basically follow the law and say, you know, the second time, this is the punishment, and apply that.
This is the only route we have, the petition for certiorari. Looking at the rule as it's stated, the court has jurisdiction to review and overturn a case on a number of bases. Due process is part of it. I think there's a path. I would have liked to have had some Court of Appeals or Supreme Court authority saying that this is what the court can do to vacate an administrative decision, but in my understanding of the law and of the Constitution and how things work, I think the court has the authority, and I'm simply asking that, because I don't think there's any prejudice to the city of St. Paul by going through the other process, that we'd be allowed to do that. But I don't think the court would be acting without authority to do what I'm asking, which is to vacate the revocation and let us start over.
Any questions?
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for the city.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Teresa Scarda, and I represent the respondent, the City of St. Paul Department of Safety and Inspections. Relator is prohibited from selling flavored tobacco products because he holds the wrong license type. And the City of St. Paul's decision to revoke the tobacco shop license held by Relator was not based on unlawful procedure, nor was the decision arbitrary and capricious. In fact, ample evidence in the record supports the decision of City Council to impose the presumptive penalty of revocation for this second violation related to prohibited flavored tobacco products within a year. The decision of the City of St. Paul Council was made under the authority granted to a municipality to license and regulate the retail sale of tobacco tobacco-related devices, and electronic delivery devices. The record reflects that Relator was given proper notice of an amendment to our legislative code related tobacco licenses, proper notice of adverse action against his license, including the basis for the presumptive penalty, and a full opportunity to be heard. This court's review is limited to the record that contained the facts, and at the city council hearing, those facts were admitted. We've discussed that. Relator's initial brief argued that...
Counsel, do you have off the top of your head where in the record there's evidence that he received notice that there was the change to the penalty code?
Yes. Just one moment to verify my site. The index...
Because I know that there... I just asked because I know that there was a question with regard to when it was passed and when he got his license, and I just want to make sure that we have the right record site for that timing.
So the initial notice of public hearing is index 6-1 through 6-9. That contains both the notice of public hearing and the a strikeout of the code being changed. And then I-7 through I-9 is a notice of public hearing that was again resent to all tobacco licensees after the date changed for the public hearing.
Thank you.
Yes. So Relator's initial brief argued that the City of St. Paul failed to present evidence that the Eastside Grocery is not a retailer entitled to the exemption in legislative code under 324.07L3. In his reply brief, Relator cites as this as his primary issue, citing Chase v. City of Minneapolis, which held that municipality's stated reasons for its actions, when reviewed by the court, may be reversed if the reasons are legally insufficient or if the decision is without factual merit. Relator argues that he didn't violate the city's licensing ordinance because he's a retail grocer and that retail grocers are exempt from the application of legislative code under this 324.07L3. That argument wasn't raised before city council, and Relator's assertion that the council should have somehow presented evidence at this hearing is incorrect. Even if the argument had been raised, Relator's mistaken. Relator holds a tobacco shop license, not the tobacco product shop license that is exempt from the prohibition on flavored products. Interestingly, as the court just discussed, Relator's prior violation was for flavored tobacco products. And that supports the conclusion that Relator is well aware of the license type Relator holds, as well as the restrictions surrounding it. And under St. Paul Legislative Code, we have two license types, the first being a tobacco shop license and the second being a tobacco product shop license. The City of St. Paul, through the amendments we've discussed, has prohibited the sale of flavored tobacco products within the city, except for this one carve-out, that being the exception relied upon by Relator, 324.07L3. And that states that retail stores holding a tobacco product shop license are permitted to sell or offer for sale flavored tobacco products. In St. Paul, tobacco product shops are highly regulated, both under our legislative code and under the zoning code. So even prior to this amendment to our legislative code, our zoning code laid out distance requirements and had the same types of prohibitions contained in our legislative code now under the tobacco product shop's license, which would be, if you're a product shop, you have to have 90% of your revenue coming from the sale of licensed products. Licensed products being defined collectively as tobacco, tobacco-related license devices and the like. You can't, if you're a tobacco product shop, let anyone under 21 into your store, nor can you, you have to make sure that your store is being staffed by at least one person solely dedicated to the sale of products while you're open. When we amended our code, we also added license number restrictions. So while our zoning code used to say you can't have any within so much of a distance from each other, when the code was amended, it added number license restrictions. And the tobacco shop license that Relator holds is actually defined in section 324.03.16. and he can only sell unflavored products because people under 21 come into the store, et cetera. Relator also argues the ineffective assistance of counsel, lack of due process, and that our legislative code section 324 is unconstitutional. As stated above, relator's claim that his prior counsel or city council failed to present an argument that he was entitled to sell flavored products is meritless.
Well, and in fact, the attorney would have had to have elected the other, the going in front of an ALJ to make those arguments, right? At the point that the decision is made to go in front of the city council, the attorney has already made the has already decided that they're going to concede the violation, correct? So that's the difference between the two procedures?
Correct. You admit the facts, but you contest the penalty, basically. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so the only issue that the attorney would have been in front of the council raising is whether the appropriate penalty was being imposed, or whether the city council should show leniency, those kind of arguments.
Mercy, leniency, correct. And that does happen quite often, where the facts will be admitted, and licensee would go before council and kind of argue their case.
And so why didn't that happen here? I mean, oftentimes defendants in criminal cases will, you know, say, yes, I admit it, but you know, basically plead for leniency. And oftentimes the court will give credit to the admission and the argument for a lesser penalty. I mean, here you had 55 letters of support that were written. You had arguments made as to why if basically the penalty was enforced, it would essentially shut their doors. Why didn't the city say, okay, we'll slap your hand next time, but you know, just be aware, you know, three strikes and you're out. I mean, wouldn't that have been an option for the city to take?
Well, it's always an option. I think one has to look at the issue before the city council. Here we're talking about sale of prohibited flavored tobacco products. And there's much in the news about the importance of keeping tobacco away from children or those under 21. And if you look at the record, Councilmember Yang certainly laid out her reasons and rationale. The record also contains ample evidence that the first revocation or the first penalty that relator had for tobacco products, the notice of violation for that, and the findings of prohibited products by the Department of Revenue included a very long list of prohibited products. Then we go in less than a year later and we find more prohibited products. The department wasn't out looking for these products. They went and responded to a complaint, and there they were on the shelves. I think all of those factors are things that the council took into consideration, and I base that judgment on Councilmember Yang's speaking with Relator and saying, you know, she's disappointed with him, and I have strong feelings around tobacco-related violations. And I thought it made it clear that we don't want to see you here. She talks about the impact on her district, and then she does say that she supports the recommendation of the Department of Safety. The other issue here is we're dealing with presumptive penalties. You know, our matrix is presumed to be presumptive, or the penalty is presumed to be presumptive. That's a lot of P's. And you would expect the council, as a matter of fairness and equity, to impose that penalty unless, you know, substantial and compelling reasons exist to not impose it. And quite frankly, I just don't believe the council saw that there. I would also point out that Councilmember Yang took the time. This licensed business is within her ward. She took the time to make sure that she understood, if you look at the record, what was going to happen as a result of her decision. She asked the city attorney who presented the case, that wasn't me at that time, if someone had their cigarette tobacco license revoked, when are they able to apply for that again? And the attorney replied, it's a 5-year prohibition. So that just kind of all weighs into the amount of time and balance that council took. And just because you don't agree with a result of a case doesn't mean that it wasn't handled well by the attorney below. And given the facts in this matter. The inspector's reports came with pictures. You know, it wasn't there wasn't a clouded issue. There were prohibited products on the site, on the licensed premises, and they had a prior, so within a year. So for all of those reasons, I believe that the council's decision to revoke the license was supported, and quite frankly, the attorney's decision to proceed in the way the attorney proceeded. He took the time to present his case. I also watched the video of the hearing and looked at the transcript extensively. He put his full case in. No one cut him off. He sat down.
But you don't disagree, counsel, that the city didn't follow its normal practice where the attorney would go second. I do think that there's one, you know, in terms of the procedure that actually happened here, I do think that there's some evidence that the city slightly departed from its procedure in terms of that it made appellant's attorney go first rather than have the city present its case first and then allow the attorney to respond to that case. Would you respond to that argument from the appellant?
Absolutely. I was just getting to that. So this attorney came up with a strategy to address it. He appears before council. It isn't the formal type proceeding here where you're told to proceed. From the record and my experience, sometimes people just get up at the podium, they call the resolution, and in this case, I believe what happened is the attorney got up and started speaking, and they just let him go. The only thing the city attorney does when they present is present a staff report, and then we sit down and we answer any questions, you know, if council asks us back up. So the record indicates that that's what happened here. The attorney got up, he presented his case, he says, yep, this is the second violation in 24 months, but we're looking for this lesser penalty. He had taken the time to actually come up with an idea of a kind of the mitigation that your honors have asked about. I want a stay of revocation for 2 years, suspend his license for 30 days, he's going to pay this substantial fine of $1,500, and then he's going to work with the Department of Safety and Inspections to make sure that this doesn't happen again. He testifies again about this great asset that this is to the community and gives us 55 letters of support. He references those. Then he concludes his argument, and the record reflects that Council President Brenmoen then says, you know, normally we hear the staff report first, but if there are questions, we're going to ask you back up. And relator's attorney responds, absolutely, I'd appreciate that. The record doesn't reflect that there was any further attempt to speak by either relator or his attorney, nor did the city council have any questions. If you look at the record, the attorney then got up and gave that more factual staff report for council, and then the record was closed. So this wasn't a deeply complex answer. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you, counsel. I do have one other question. Does the city of St. Paul have any kind of process that a person, once there's a decision by the city council, they can move the county to vacate or, you know, make some kind of motion that would allow them to then use the ALJ process if the city council so decided?
No, okay. Your Honor. The process is to appeal to this court under the arbitrary and capricious. That's kind of long-standing case law.
Okay, thank you.
That we've used that process. We use the ALJ kind of as the fact-finding body before then council will review the findings and recommendations and adopt them at as their own or amend them if there are questions. But, you know, that's kind of the way we've handled this for as long as I've been around. We do have a process where a licensee might ask for a stay of that order pending an appeal to the Court of Appeals. I do not recall if that happened in this one. I have about 4 similar cases moving right now, so I think it did, but I'm not 100% sure. But in conclusion, there's nothing in the record to support relator's claims. The penalty imposed was the standard matrix penalty for a second offense of this type. He was given an opportunity to choose how he presented his case, and he chose to admit the facts and appear before city council. The record reflects that his previous attorney fully understood the license type he held and his restrictions. And again, Relator has not met its burden of proof on any of the arguments presented, and the city would respectfully request that the decision of the city council to revoke the tobacco shop license held by Relator should be upheld.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just following up on the factual scenario with regard to the attorney that was handling the case prior to our involvement. And I, Your Honor, I agree with the line of questioning that you were on. He really didn't present any case. What we just heard right now is information that should have been gleaned at an administrative law hearing. None of these facts were actually put into the record at the time. The attorney didn't argue any of this, anything regarding the underlying circumstances, whether there was perhaps selective enforcement going on in this situation. We are aware that the city has determined that that they have too many tobacco shop licenses, and they want to cut back the tobacco shop licensing to 150. Well, it just so happens, and Ms. Scarda has referenced another number of other cases. Well, we're working on a number of those other cases with her. And there seems to be an indication, at least, that certain ethnic groups, and it might be because those ethnic groups are the ones that are group of consumers that frequent them, but the fact that they are restricting those licenses, there should be an avenue that we could have brought that, investigated that. That would have been done through an administrative law hearing. We would have been able to seek more information, to present evidence for that particular issue, among other issues. We just don't believe that the previous attorney, by throwing himself on the and our client on the mercy of the court, was effective assistance. It should have been taken into the arena of an administrative law judge, where these kind of issues could have been brought up. They are pertinent to the decision that the administrative law judge and the council should have been made aware of. And I just have to keep going back to the 2-minute time frame. I don't believe that 310, Legislative Code 310, anticipates that there's going to be that 2 minutes that you jump up, you run to the stand, which is basically what this attorney did, and talked for 2 minutes exactly, sits down, and the case is over, and goodbye, client. We just don't think our client was properly represented, and we would respectfully ask this court to allow us to bring these issues in front of the court at the ALJ level. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Case is submitted.